Welcome back, everybody, to this week's edition of the Penn Stated Football Podcast. It is post-Peach Bowl, and I'm sure some of you have recovered from that. I don't know if all of you have. Sam Freeman, I don't know if you recovered from it. It was an interesting game, and I knew how we were going to start this podcast on Saturday in the fourth quarter, because this is the email I received during the game. I'm going to read it word for word, and this is from a fan who has gone back and forth with me a bunch. I've gotten a lot of feedback from him on stuff I've written, and I could genuinely say he's a very level-headed Penn State fan. This is what he wrote, Sam. "Never more embarrassed as a Penn State fan than today, and I go back to the late 60s. Was it that bad? What am I missing here? I think James Franklin comes into the post-game press conference, and I was really entertained by it, because he comes in and is asked to deliver an opening statement. And a lot of times these guys who, the coaches of losing teams, come in and just say, "I'll just take questions." He comes right in and says, "We had too many players opt out and too many assistant coaches leave." Four players opted out. Both the coordinators were gone. You know, there is a fine line here between reasons and excuses in sports. And I think if you're an Ole Miss fan, if you're a Franklin hater among the Penn State faithful, you're going to look at that as an excuse. I look at it the other way. I totally think that's a reason for not playing well in that game. And I'll put it this way. If I knew Kalen King and Johnny Dixon weren't going to play, I'd never have picked Penn State to win the game. Never. I mean, and I knew Johnny Dixon wasn't going to play, but I didn't know Kalen King wasn't going to play. And there was some thought last week in Georgia that Olu was going to play. And I told you that after the show last week. After we did the show, I said, I'm hearing Olu might play. And a lot of stuff happened really close to that game. And obviously Chop Robinson was out, and half games for guys like Caden Wallace and Adisa Isaac. And, you know, you're looking at a team that didn't have its two best pass rushers for most of the game, that didn't have its two best offensive tackles for most of the game, that didn't have its two best cornerbacks at all. Why are we looking at this game as anything other than what it was, which is a glorified exhibition game at the end of a season? That's what it was to me. If you think Cam Miller and Zion Tracy are going to play well against that team, the pace they play at, the style of receiver they have, the talent they have at receiver, I don't know what the expectations are anymore. I didn't think Penn State played well with what they had, but they weren't Penn State. Am I totally wrong here, Sam?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you brought up Cam Miller and Zion Tracy. It's, you know, they're young. It is what it is. They're being and I'm not to pick on those two players individually. It's just because you brought them up there at the end. What are you going to expect? It's not a game that's the culmination of a full regular season for a lot of these players. For a lot of these players, it was the most meaningful playing time they've seen this season. That's no indictment on their development. It's no indictment on the future. It's not even an indictment on where they are right now, because as you said, team might have been expecting Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, you know, Daquan obviously played, but, you know, Adisa only plays one half. I don't know that this tells us much. I saw people complaining about James bringing up the assistant coaches leaving and bringing up the opt-outs. And from one side, I get it. I mean, the fans want to hear what they want to hear at the end of a loss. But I don't know. It's the reality of the situation. We've railed against it all season. The bowl games are different now. It is what it is. This is the reality. Penn State came into this game with impact players missing. And there's nothing more to say than that, I think. It's not to say that the actual output on offense, for example, wasn't disappointing. You know, I can't imagine Penn State is happy with how that went down, but as a holistic assessment of the team, I don't see how you can take a ton from this. It's what it is a meaningless game, for better or for worse. You know, and that would be the case if Penn State won. If Penn State won this game and Ole Miss had a bunch of opt-outs, I would feel the exact same way. It would feel that Ole Miss didn't field a completely well-rounded team, and it is what it is. It's not taking away from Ole Miss's win. It's, you know, we brought up last week that it's their first 11-win season now. You know, it's certainly something to hang your hat on, but I don't know what. I don't know what where the sky is falling rhetoric is sort of coming from. It reminds me a little bit of the Outback Bowl a couple years ago. It is what it is. I don't know how much more you can say other than that.
You know what it reminds me of in a way, and this is going to be, I'm going to get so many emails. I'm going to say this stuff. It reminds me of the Rose Bowl. This Penn State's Utah now. Utah had a lot of players opt out of that game, and look, it's almost the same scenario. It mirrors itself. Utah played that game without a really great tight end, Dalton Kincaid, who went on. I don't know who he's playing for in the NFL. That's how maybe the Bills. But I you know, he was a first round pick. They missed. They didn't have their best cornerback in the game. You know, they were down a bunch of guys, but Penn State wasn't. They weren't down very many guys. And if you go and look at that, look, Clifford plays. They have all those receivers going. They have both the freshman running backs are out there. The offensive line is intact from what it was. Penn State had the same kind of situation last season that Ole Miss had this year, where they were just caught in that one cycle where they didn't have a lot of guys coming out for the draft, and it bettered them. They were able to use Chop Robinson and Adisa Isaac and Curtis Jacobs and Kalen King plays, and a lot of those guys. I mean, they have Joey Porter, but it didn't really affect them all that much because Kalen King didn't opt out or Johnny Dixon didn't opt out. Well, when they lose Johnny Dixon and Kalen King this year, it fundamentally changes how they could play the pass. It's completely unfair to judge Penn State in this season on that game, because that's not Penn State. Again, and I will continue to say it, and it's no shot at Cam Miller or Zion Tracy. And I get it. They were going to start next year. They're in line, and I think there's a trap to be fallen into here for fans to say, well, these are, you know, this is the springboard in the next year for these two guys. This is going to be a way to tell how good they're going to be, and then they go out and they weren't good. You know, I'm not going to pull any punches. They weren't great, and I didn't think they'd be great though, because I really like that Ole Miss receiving core. But you know, the same way Penn State has to look at this is the same way Utah looked at it last year. And I know for a fact, you know, they lost Cam Rising during the game. That might be a different game if Cam Rising doesn't get hurt in the Rose Bowl. And Penn State loses Abdul Carter. So it's kind of, you know, both teams lost a guy and in the middle had enough opt-outs and then lost a really key player during the game. So, you know, I think Penn State fans looked at the Rose Bowl last year as this great springboard because they won. But there are reasons that they won. You know, they're not that much better than Utah, I don't think. But hey, in that sense, no excuses. I get it. If you win, you get to reap the benefits of that. And Ole Miss getting the 11th win, there's no stigma on that. There's no asterisk with it. They got their 11th win, first time in 129 years. They deserved it. Congratulations to them. But if you're a Penn State fan and you think that's an embarrassment, I don't know what to say. I don't. If you're embarrassed by the season, I don't know what to tell you. There's just nothing at this point that's going to convince you that this team is maybe on the right track. And I get it. You know, you don't beat Ohio State again this year. And that's disappointing considering, you know, Ohio State wasn't a playoff team. And you don't beat Michigan, which I get it is disappointing because you had them at home. But this game, I don't know. I'm not convinced right now that Penn State in 2023 wasn't better than Ole Miss. And if they played in the regular season and lost, fine, Ole Miss is better. Ole Miss is better, but who cares about the bowl games anymore? And I hate to say that because, yeah, the games mean something to the guys playing in them. But when you don't have certain guys playing in them, it's not your team anymore. And do people think Missouri is better than Ohio State, really? So why are we here? Why is this the only fan base overreacting to what happened in a bowl game where arguably your four best players didn't play and your fifth best player played a half of the game? I don't understand. Someone's got to explain it to me better than I'm getting it, because To me, this tells you nothing about 2024. Nothing. And it wasn't gonna, and if they won, it wasn't going to tell you anything about 2024. If you didn't learn that from the Rose Bowl, I don't know what to say. You know, the Rose Bowl didn't propel Penn State. All it did was create hype. That's all it did. And now Penn State's going to have no hype, and it might be better that way. But, you know, next year, you knew they weren't going to have Kalen King. You knew they weren't going to have Johnny Dixon. And you knew they weren't going to have Olu. You didn't know. You know, you knew they weren't going to have Adisa. Caden Wallace is leaving. Curtis Jacobs leaving. Hardy leaving. That hurts. Yeah, they didn't get any of those guys back. But at this point, it doesn't matter how the guys who are replacing them don't show you anything in this game. They don't, because you're working off 14 practices. That's it. And they hadn't played really all year. I think it's silly. I think it's silly to judge anything off of this. I think it's silly to let this ruin your view. I think if this game changed your mind on the regular season, or soured you on anything that happened, I don't know. I'd be upset about Ohio State and Michigan, but I don't know. Could you be upset about this? I think it's just another football game. And I think of all the games Penn State played in 2023, this game, a couple of steps above the blue white game to me, and a couple of steps below UMass and Delaware.
Well, you bring up the blue white game, and frankly, I think that's a great analogy for this. I know that's a weird take, given that this was a New Year's Six Bowl, and all season I've been saying, you know, reaching a New Year's Six Bowl at 10-2 is nothing to scoff at, and I still believe that. However, you brought it up. Next season, there's no Olu. Next season, there's no Kalen King. Next season, there's no Chop. There's no Adisa. There's no Johnny Dixon. There's no Daquan Hardy. And I think some people looked at this game as, okay, even if they don't play, we're getting a snippet of what to expect. But is it, to me, that's the same way as going to the blue-white game and expecting this is the team that we're going to see come September. Because, you know, as you said, some of these players stepping into these, you know, supporting roles, they're stepping up and replacing Kalen King. They're replacing Olu. They're replacing whoever it may be. They weren't expected to do that at the beginning of the year, you know, and if they were, they would have had a full offseason camp to prepare for those roles. The coaching staff would have a full offseason and a full training camp, full everything like that, to figure out how to harness their strengths and mask their weaknesses. Where right now, you know, and sure, the amount of time that they had to prepare from the end of the regular season to now wasn't unsubstantial, but it's nothing compared to the amount of reps, the amount of attention, the amount of development that a Zion Tracy, a Cam Miller, you know, pick a name, you know, that they're going to receive over this next, what, 6 months, more than that, what, 9 months, 8 months. I'm just going to throw numbers out till I get it right.
I think it's going to be nine by the time, but yeah, there's still a lot of football in between there.
Exactly. Well, and that's what it is. You're seeing the first steps taken by a lot of young players. How many young players burst onto the scene against a 11-win SEC team and perform at an award-winning level? It's not fair to expect of people within Penn State, but it's not fair to expect that of any program. You know, it's not even to put Penn State down. It's just the way it is. I don't know what you could have expected.
Ohio State didn't play well without their guy. And look, they're better than Missouri. Everybody knows they're better than Missouri. You know how I know they're better than Missouri? Michigan proved it. Michigan beat the SEC champ. And Michigan wasn't so much better than Ohio State and Penn State this year. They weren't a mile ahead of those two teams. So, but when they were at full strength. Now, and the only one of those three teams that played at full strength was Michigan. You know, you brought up something that I wanted to kind of clarify on my end. I don't want to say that I think a New Year's Six game is only a couple of steps ahead of a blue white game kind of thing. That's an insult to that game, but it is. And it's not my doing. I don't want it to be that way. I want the New Year's Six game to have a lot of meaning, because it's always had a lot of meaning to me as a fan growing up watching those games. It doesn't anymore. It's changed. These kids who back out of the game, and look, and I get it. I completely understand it. Look what happened to Abdul Carter. That was as dirty a block as you'll ever see. And it shouldn't be. And I don't care that it's legal. It's dirty. He dove at the guy's knees, and Carter didn't get out of the way. He didn't see it. He goes down, hurts his leg. It's probably a pretty bad injury. Why does Abdul Carter have to play that game? Why do, yeah, everybody has a risk of injury. So I get it. I get why you would back out and not take any risk at all. But when you do that, you demean the game. Everything your coach is out there saying about what this means to the program, everything your backup player is doing to help compete. And I don't want to hear, oh no, we have confidence in those guys. I didn't have no confidence in those guys to win that game. As soon as I saw the lineup they put out there, I said, man, they're finished. They can't compete with this. They can't. You think Lane Kiffin, the first thing he's going to notice is that Cam Miller and Zion Tracy are out there and Johnny Dixon and Kalen King aren't. He's going to start throwing. We saw that second series. They just went out there quick throw after quick throw, very, slant after slant, out after out. And, they just got rid of the ball quickly because they still couldn't block what was left. I'm not knocking those guys. I think I get it. I do. And I, if it was my son, I don't know what I'd do. I know some of those kids wanted to play. Let's put it that way. And they got told not to. So that is what it is. It's not their decision entirely at this point. Yeah, they're basically professionals. If you graduated and you're going and you're leaving, you're not coming back. Why bother? Why risk it? But it does two things. It takes you out of the game and it makes you look like you've turned your back on what the program is trying to accomplish. And in a way you have, but in a whole other sense, it totally changes the team that you have on the field. And that's my point. It's once those guys don't play, it's not the Peach Bowl. And once Utah lost, it was Clark Phillips and whoever last Kincaid last year, they lost a couple of guys. It wasn't really Utah. And as soon as Cam Rising goes down, it's definitely not Utah. It was Utah this year, but it wasn't Utah last year. So, yeah, I don't understand why people aren't grasping that. And I think there are some reasons you could look at this game and say that's troubling if you're Penn State. And one of them is the receivers. And there's a lot of receivers news this week. I mean, a lot coming out. I mean, first of all, Oh, Dante Cephas is in the portal. And look, we've been waiting for Dante Cephas's big breakout game. It never came. I don't know what happened there. Sometimes you're just not a fit. Sometimes it just doesn't work out. The system doesn't work for you. The playbook doesn't work. The coaches aren't what you wanted. And I think, growing up in Pittsburgh, part of Dante Cephas always wanted to play at Penn State. And he took a chance and it didn't work. And he entered the transfer portal today on it's Wednesday. So Cephas will play for somebody else next year. And I don't know if that's a big deal to Penn State because he didn't play a down in that game. And it was interesting with the receiver, Sam, because you didn't see anything out of him until the fourth quarter in this game. Nothing, literally nothing. He got a couple of targets. Only two of them caught a pass. Harrison Wallace, the third, who looked to me pretty good. I think there's, if you got a guy you could build around, Harrison Wallace isn't the worst one to have. And Liam Clifford had a couple. That's troubling because this is a wideout driven league anymore. This is a wideout driven game. These guys on the edge, look what Ole Miss did. I know the tight end had 130 some yards, but the receivers were the difference in the game. Every time they needed a big play, they threw it to one of those guys. Penn State, and James said after the game, it's the development of the receivers is kind of a big issue with the offense where it's a little bit of Drew Aller not being as accurate as he needs to be. It's a little bit of the tight ends being good. And it's a little bit of the offensive line not protecting well enough, a little bit of the coordinators not calling great plays for these guys to get them going. But I watched the receivers pretty close on Saturday. They weren't open. They weren't very consistently open. And the fact that Drew is not pinpoint accurate doesn't help. But they're not beating guys by a step. They're running with guys. And that's not a great Ole Miss secondary. That's a big problem to me. That secondary on film did not impress me all year, and they were really good in this game. And look, we had the Twitter war between some of the reporters and two of the guys in the – and I'm not going to mention who they are. because on one hand, don't blame them for saying one receiver said there's plenty of talent in that room. These guys just don't know. The other one said they never play. You know, these guys don't ever play football. What do they know anyway? Just ignore them. And that's fine. I don't begrudge them saying that. If somebody said that we have no talent in this room, I'd be really worried about the guy. but they're two guys who don't, neither of them had a catch in the game. They're two guys who are essentially non-factors down the stretch of the season, essentially non-factors. So my question to you is why, what's going on with these guys? Do they need an overhaul of the room? Is there something there that could be salvaged? Why aren't they using them? And I agree with James. I think it's a lot of different things. And I think one thing he said this year that really stands out in my mind right before they canned Yurcich was we have to figure out these easy pass plays to get these guys going. Every team has them. Why aren't we using it? They didn't use them in the Peach Bowl. If you told me Mike Yurcich called that game, I'd have believed it. So why aren't these guys being used more? Is it because they're not good, or is it because they just forget about them? I don't know how else to say it. And I get it. The tight ends are good. They draw a lot of targets. The Pat Freiermuth was really good too. And it didn't take targets away from John Dotson.
I feel like you can't point to the fact that, you know, transfer receivers have to work their way into the room. Mitchell Tinsley came in and was on fire right off the bat.
Correct.
You brought up Freiermuth not drawing away from Dotson. Brenton Strange didn't really draw from Parker Washington. They managed to coexist in the same environment. And Parker existed at the same time as both Dotson and Tinsley. You know, it's not as this is a new issue for Penn State, I think. And to me, it's hard to pinpoint what is causing the issue because, you know, as the receivers were saying, I don't think anybody doubts that there is talent in the receiving room. I don't see how you can really dispute that at this point. But talent doesn't necessarily equate production. And that much was clear this season. I don't know who you can point at in the receiving room who performed even with expectations. And is that individual receiver's faults? You know, maybe there's an element to that. You know, I saw people complaining about Coach Higgins on, you know, social media after the game. Is that a fair assessment? Perhaps. I don't know. It's his first season. You know, an offensive coordinator has an underwhelming season in his role and gets sent packing halfway through the year. All those things play a factor. I don't know that there's one solitary reason for this being the case. But what I will say is I do think they have a real problem. As I said, and maybe you disagree with me, I can't think of one receiver who, you know, we've had our complaints about Keandre. You know, he's a very talented receiver. He had multiple games this season that were strong. But as you said, he disappeared down the stretch. We've said multiple times this year, you know, is he a Jahan Dotson, Parker Washington, even Mitchell Tinsley type of receiver? And I haven't felt that way. You know, I don't know that many people have felt that way. You look at Cephas, you know, Higgins said something interesting about he said that there was accountability for how guys practice, basically. I don't have any information other than what Hagen said, but to me, you know, there seems to be some turmoil in that room. That was in reference to Cephas, who obviously, you know, enters the transfer portal. But with the, you know, the bubbling, how do I want to say this? The bubbling frustration in the room that sort of exploded on social media after the game, you know, understandable entirely, as you said. But you mix that with sort of the underwhelming year from the transfer receivers, the comments from Higgins about accountability for how guys practice and James referencing the open competition. When I say this, I don't mean that there's not talent in that room, but you gotta transplant some people in this room. I think you have to bring in, even before this game, we knew that Penn State was going to have to bring new talent into the receiver room. To me, this has to be priority number one for that offense. I'm sure we'll talk about it either today or at a later date, but if you really want to truly evaluate Drew, you have to have receivers that are going to put him in a position where you can evaluate him. Drew is not above criticism. As you said, his accuracy has not been pinpoint perfect. He's certainly not been a number one overall draft selection the way some, may have expected. But frankly, nothing in the past game worked as expected. And so, to lay that all on Drew is unfair, to lay that all on the receivers is unfair, but frankly, they have to figure something out. And like I said, there seems to be bubbling frustration. The comments that are being made publicly from a program that's very tight-lipped about everything, to me, there's the potential for this to go radioactive quickly. I don't think we're there yet, but I think real attention needs to be put there. The receivers have a point, but the coaches also have a point. And frankly, although I'm not one to frequently defend this fan base, and I would quickly distance myself from a lot of the things I saw on social media after the Peach Bowl, but I can understand the frustration of the fans with the offense's performance as well.
Yeah, you can't, and I think it looked okay in the fourth quarter where, Ole Miss clearly was playing a little bit different style of defense, but they went, Harrison Wallace had a lot of catches in the fourth quarter and looked good. But last four games of the season, Keandre had two catches for 28 yards. That's not enough. He's a guy who had eight catches against Maryland, eight against Iowa, 123 yards against West Virginia, six catches against Ohio State, then completely disappears. And, he's a good example of, is there talent in the room? Yeah. Go watch Keandre warm up. It's so entertaining. It's one-handed catches. He's catching bullets. He's just reaching out one hand and catching bullets thrown at him and I don't know if it's the right way to warm up. I don't know. But he does a lot of fun stuff, and he could do a lot of – he's got great hands. But he disappeared. Where were you for four games? You're so great. Where were you? 28 yards in the last four games. He had one target in the Peach Bowl. Cephas, come on. Didn't work. Okay, that's fine. Sometimes it doesn't work. Six catches against Maryland, but no three against Michigan State, nothing really against anyone else. Two catches here and there. Doesn't even get on the field. And James, after the game, pulls no punches and says, basically, it's an open competition. What do you want me to do? Harrison Wallace came back from an injury. He took his spot. He's better than him. And you know what? Harrison Wallace is very good. Harrison Wallace had some injuries this year. Seven catches against West Virginia. He was healthy for like 2.5 games this year. Here's what he did in those 2.5 games. West Virginia, seven catches, 72 yards. UMass, three catches, 44 yards. Ole Miss, four catches, 67 yards and a touchdown. I think the argument is, if you're defending the receivers, they have to find ways to get Harrison Wallace the ball. Those quick throws or those easy swing passes that used to get the ball to Dotson all the time. Try Trey Wallace in that spot. Do it. Just do something to get him the ball. But I don't think there's any call to get any of those other guys the ball. Liam Clifford, you want to know what guy I think met expectations? Liam Clifford met expectations. Every once in a while, he made a big catch. Every once in a while, got him going. Illinois, I remember he had a big catch in that game right before the half. Set up a field goal or a touchdown, set up a score, and they really badly needed that play because they were doing nothing on offense. And, Liam Clifford had a big catch in this game too. So I think that's the guy in this receiving core that met expectations. And I think halfway through the season, Keandre was meeting him, maybe exceeding them, but nobody else. And, you look at this group, and I don't know if they really fixed this problem any other way but the transfer portal. Those guys, and I'm not saying they're not talented, not saying they're not fast, not saying they run good routes. They don't have one guy who looks like a receiver who could play at Ohio State, visibly, who looks that way physically. I know there's a lot of talk about Julian Fleming maybe coming back and playing a final season with Penn State. Julian Fleming is going to look like Adonis compared to some of these guys. bigger guy, muscular guy. No, you know, Marvin Harrison, he looks like an NFL receiver. Penn State doesn't have that. Omari Evans. If we were having this discussion in August, correct me if I'm wrong, Keandre, Cephas, Trey Wallace, Evans. They would be your top four guys, right? You would think those are your top four. Okay. Omari Evans didn't have more than one catch in any game. He had four targets in the Peach Bowl, didn't catch a pass. Penn State got really nothing out of two of the four guys you would think would be their top four receivers in August. And they got nothing out of Keandre over the last month. So, yeah, they need to fix this room, but they need to get a different type of receiver in here because they are smaller guys. Omari Evans, the reason I brought him up, I saw him walking next to Caden Saunders. They are two small guys. Now, yeah, talent. Yeah, I'm sure you got some talent. I'm sure you could run routes and you know, but you know, you got 2 4-star recruits there. I think Omari might have been a three, but they're not playing like that right now. And they haven't played like that in 2 years. And not outside of that, they don't look like they're their 4-star guy. They don't. And I'm not picking on them. I'm just pointing out the obvious here. They need to get a very different style of receiver in there. And you know, they get those guys and they don't pan out. Justin Shorter was that kind of receiver, and he didn't pan out. The guys who work for them are Dotson. You know, Godwin is a bigger guy. Deshaun Hamilton, another smaller guy, works out. So it's not a knock on smaller guys. But if they have a chance here to get better, they better get some different style of receivers because they're really just basically plugging in small guy after small guy. So I think they have a chance here to be good at receiver, but they have to build around Wallace and they have to get a couple of transfers in here who are going to work or develop Malik McClain or something, because what they've done so far is it's just not working. And I think it's outside of that room. I know it's frustrating for the receiver. They know it's got to be frustrating for Marcus Hagans, but they're not getting much support in the post-game press conferences from James, who's not pulling any punches on it because hey, I know there are a lot of people to blame, but he said after the game, thought the receivers had really had a very good camp or a very good postseason, and it just didn't translate to the game. So yeah, that's where they are at receiver, and they need to get better there. Sam will be back in the second half. We'll talk about something Penn State fans love even more than receivers and complaining. Michigan in a minute. I'm moving to the country. I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. Peaches come from a can. Sam, I got another email I wanted to bring up here to start segment two, even before we get into Michigan, which I know Penn State fans love when I talk about Michigan. Let me read this one. Another fan who's written to me before, who has a pretty good grasp on reality, I would say. Sam, he asked me to please write something because I have some influence. Evidently, I have influence. I don't believe that at all. But he said, please write something that will get Penn State's Board of Trustees to consider whether James Franklin is the right head coach for this team. So I think it's healthy to consider whether your coach is the right guy. I'm not going to get into that debate right here, but we're going to have some fun with it because this is the only way I think there could be fun with this conversation. But let's say you're going to get rid of James Franklin. Let's say you're the Board of Trustees here and I have some influence. Can I convince you to hire Lane Kiffin after what happened this week? Now, Lane is a very interesting man. And that's what I walked out of Atlanta thinking. That's the one thing I learned this way. I didn't learn anything from the game. I learned a lot from Lane Kiffin. Lane will tell you exactly what he thinks, what's on his mind. He pulls no punches, and he also plays dirty. Do you see what he did to Kobe King? With the tweets,
yeah.
So I think everybody knows about this, so I'll give the Reader's Digest version here. But basically, somebody tweeted quotes from Kobe King, very defamatory to. I laugh because it was kind of the most mild like thing you could actually say about anybody. But he said something about Ole Miss, but it reminded me of the scene in the office when Michael Scott had, you know, had the workers come in from Stanford and they didn't like him, so he had the he flattened all their tires and wrote the revenge note. It was basically signed by nobody, and everybody figured out quickly that it was Michael that wrote it to try to get everybody on the same page and whatever. And it's the same thing. It's the same kind of thing. You know, Kobe King says, we're gonna beat the crap out of them or whatever. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but Lane Kiffin tweeted it. He retweeted it off of this account that was like, "We are Penn State 23," the most generic thing you can come up with for Penn State. And turns out that it was written by a member of Kiffin's staff, and Kiffin knew about it and retweeted it. And it's and on one set one sense, it's not funny because he mentions a player. It was Kobe King. Kobe would never say that. And it was pretty clear to everybody who was around the team that Kobe didn't say it because he wasn't available for comment anyway all week. So it's one of those deals where no one's going to go and find it and quote Kobe King on that. And it just isn't going to happen. And Penn State's sports information people went nuts about it. You know, he didn't say this, yada, yada, yada. Please, you know, get that word out. And then after the game, Lane Kiffin says, "Yeah, it was a joke. We knew it was all in good fun." Do you want that? You know, James would never. He would never do that. That's not some. That's beneath James Franklin. But it's not beneath Lane Kiffin. It isn't. And I'm not saying that in support of him or against him. But the man could coach offense. He has a fun offense. That's a great scheme, and he gets a lot of transfer players who turn out. All those receivers that Penn State got in the portal that didn't work last year. Every portal receiver that Lane Kiffin got has been great. So would you take that guy over what you have, considering what that guy is completely different and one level than what you have? I wouldn't, but I think we're at the point where that segment of Penn State fans who doesn't like Franklin for whatever reason would love Lane Kiffin.
Yeah, I can understand the appeal of Lane Kiffin. You know, you could make the argument that our job would be a lot more interesting if Lane Kiffin was the coach as
And
opposed to
it's
James
interesting
Franklin.
enough as it is. Let's
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like you said, I mean, Kiffin's a character, right? But I don't know that he fits Penn State. You know, I'm not too up in arms over, you know, I saw some of the beat members and stuff were up in arms over the fake account that Lane Kiffin was retweeting and everything that you just described. You know, other than the Kobe King tweet, you know, none of it really impacted, you know, any specific player or anything like that. But at the same time, that's not really the culture that Penn State has spent time building. You know what I mean? It can be innocuous in some ways, but at the same time, it's so antithetical to sort of what, you know, just the aura around Penn State. You know, the no names all game, the basic blues, all sorts of stuff like that. You know, and who knows? Maybe people are looking to move on from that. You know, maybe people are tired of that the tradition that surrounds Penn State, but as it stands, right, it's what Penn State is, and I think James fits that culture a lot better than Lane does, and that's, you know, that's completely putting aside the coaching styles and stuff like that. I don't know why you would make that change. I know it's all hypothetical, but I don't see how you're in a better position with Lane Kiffin demonstrably as opposed to James.
The point I'm trying to make is that it's if you're going to replace James, you have to get a guy who wants to come in and is better. You don't want to get somebody who's not better than James. You want to get someone who's better. And there aren't that many guys out there who would be clearly better and want to come in. And look, I think Kiffin is a guy who, if you want to argue he's clearly better, I think he'd come in. I think he's a job hopper. He would definitely ditch Ole Miss to go to Penn State. I depending on the money, depending on the roster, I think he'd do it. But there's very few of those guys. I mean, you're not getting Harbaugh. You're not getting Nick Saban. You're not getting Kirby Smart. You're not getting Kalen DeBoer, I don't think. You're not getting Ryan Day. Those guys are, that's what you got. You got the next level of guy, and it's Kiffin. And I'm with you. I saw all these, the beat, right? You know, bless them. They're just trying to get clicks. and I probably should be too, I guess. But I didn't think that was a big deal at all. That story, that was kind of funny. I really did. And, you know, it's on brand for Kiffin, but it's totally off brand for Penn State. And that's one of those things where, you know, when you cover Penn State, you gotta, you know, something you said that stood out to me, like maybe some fans are trying to get past that the branding of the team right now, the no names all game, whatever the thing is. And I actually think they're not. I actually think they like that. Now, they don't want to hear this, but the coach in the country who best exemplifies that is James. James embraces that. James sells kids on this very straightforward, no-nonsense approach to college football. And that's what Penn State's always had. James, in his press conferences, spends way too much time, for my liking, overrating the opponent. You know, I don't want to hear about how great Maryland is or how great Rutgers. And I know James is trying to get his team focused through that too. And I get it. He's got a job to do, and that's the smart thing to do. But I, as a reporter, don't particularly like spending 15 minutes a week doing that. But James does it. He tells me how great Maryland is, tells me how great Iowa is, tells me how outstanding Rutgers is and how far they've come along. James sounds a lot like an old guy who used to coach at Penn State, if you listen to him. Sounds an awful lot like Joe Paterno. And the fact that he's not Joe Paterno, I think, is the problem for him. And that's never going to change. And that stinks for him. But, you know, I just think a lot of fans want to go back to the days when Penn State used to go undefeated every year when Joe Pa was coaching and win the national championship every year. You know, if you want to replace James, Lane Kiffin's a guy who's going to be totally different. That's a guy who would want your job. It really is. Unless you trust the athletic department to go find that young guy that nobody knows about, or the guy who was the up and comer, because those up and comers, they fail 75% of the time. It just doesn't work out for them all the time. Kalen DeBoer is an anomaly. There's a lot more Willie Taggarts who don't work that everybody wants at one point. So I think you stick with what you got. And I think James right now, I'm not, you know, this is my message to the fan who wrote, I'm not going to advocate for something that I don't think is necessary. So we'll move on, Sam. What a night for the Big Ten on New Year's Day. I mean, yeah. Could that have gone any better for the Big Ten? Washington and Michigan in the national championship game? They're going to be in this conference next year. And what a terrible night for the SEC. Their champion gets beat. And the team that beat their champion gets beat. They've clearly taken a little bit of a step back behind the Big Ten. And the two teams in the Pac-12 Big Ten right now that played full strength looked very impressive. Does that game tell you more about Penn State than the Peach Bowl does? To me, it does. And I know the score was close, and I know it was an overtime game. But Michigan, I think, played Alabama the way you have to play them. And they were player for player better. I look at that game as a sign that Michigan, when they play their game, they could beat the best team in the SEC. And they played their game. They played the same way they played up against Penn State, and they played the same way against Ohio State. And definitely, I thought Ohio State played Michigan better than Alabama did. I said this before the game. I don't want to hear from Michigan if they don't beat Alabama. Don't want to hear from them ever again, because I thought Alabama was suspect in ways that they proved to be suspect in that game. I didn't think their quarterback was that great. Didn't think their offensive line was that great. And Michigan impacted both of them. They played a clean game. They did what they need to do to win. And I know everybody hates Michigan. No one in the Big Ten wants to give Michigan any credit for anything, but they bailed out the conference this bowl season. Totally bailed them out.
Oh, absolutely. And with all the conference realignment, it's easy to forget that this four-team playoff field was two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams. You know, new look Big Ten and new look SEC. But it was it was the future sort of looking at you. And it was yeah, if you're the Big Ten, you can't be more happy than that. I mean, effectively you go 2-0 in the playoff, and they looked like the two better teams, I would say. You know, I know Washington, you know, tried to blow it there at the end against Texas, but predominantly through that game, Washington looked stronger than Texas, in my opinion. That's sort of what you've been saying this season about Penn State and, you know, where it fits in the Big Ten and everything like that. It's not just Ohio State and Michigan you have to compete with anymore. You know, Washington is no slouch. I know Penix is leaving, but, you know, Washington has succeeded before Penix. I know we say don't take too much from the Peach Bowl, and I still stand by that, obviously. And Ohio State shouldn't be down on itself after losing to Missouri. It is what it is. But I think this bowl season can serve as a wake-up call for a different reason. You know, not because Penn State and Ohio State lose in those New Year's Six bowls, but because Michigan and Washington play at such a high level in those playoff games. You can't rest on your laurels in the Big Ten next year. It's, I mean, and you're not even talking about USC. You're not talking about UCLA. For all the talk about the SEC and how deep and talented the SEC is, the Big Ten looks very scary next year. I don't know who could feel that they were safe in that conference next year.
USC looked really, really good in their game. And you know, the quarterback is going to replace Caleb Williams looked really good. And I think that's a trap you could fall into, because that really doesn't mean much playing that one game, as opposed to, you know, now you're on film. Now you've got a different group of receivers, different, you know, whatever heading into next year. But yeah, you know, I think USC is going to be a threat offensively, obviously. But you know, you look at, you know, Washington too, and I think Washington to me is a Big Ten team right now because of Penix. I'm shocked how good Penix is. I can't believe the way that guy throws the ball, because you know, and granted, he played some great games against Penn State over the years when he was at Indiana. Some really great games. The 2020 game, he ruined Penn State in 2020. It was Micah Parsons not coming back, and Penix in that game destroyed that season for Penn State. And you know, he scores on that 2-point conversion. Whether, you know, Tom Allen says he definitely scored, he was asked at his press conference. You know, that's a biased opinion. I think he might have been a little short, but he wasn't so short that I think you'll lose sleep over it if you're a Penn State fan. Who knows? And that opener in 2020, but Penix. You know, I just watching the last couple of games, the Pac-12 championship game that he played in, I thought he was 99th percentile performance. And the same thing with the Sugar Bowl. I thought he was great. So yeah, that's a guy who I think it works against him a little bit that Michigan's seen him, and they're gonna have a plan of attack here. But that's a really, really good offense that he's commanding right now. He is in complete control, and the deep ball he throws is impeccable. I think Penix really has been the breakout star of the last month of the college football season. But we're talking about quarterbacks here, and next year when these guys come in, Bo Nix is with Oregon right now, Heisman contender. He's going to be gone next year. Caleb Williams gone, Penix gone. Ohio State's going to be looking for a new starter. JJ McCarthy, is he coming back next year for Michigan? I think he makes Michigan very dangerous if he comes back, but there's a chance he leaves. There's a chance Harbaugh's not around. I mean, we know we say this every year, but Harbaugh to the NFL looks more and more real. So yeah, you look at this next year, and I don't know how you look at this and say Penn State has no shot. They have almost the entire offense coming back, save for those three offensive linemen, one of whom is an all-timer, don't get me wrong, but you're going to be okay on the offensive line. The other two guys are okay, Caden Wallace and, you know, Hunter Norzad. Okay, you could probably find another Hunter Norzad. So you know, Penn State's got a shot next year in this conference, to me, because they're going to have a good group of guys coming back, especially if they can play defense. Let's see if they can get after the passer like they did under Manny Diaz. It's going to be hard to ask them to do that. But if they get there enough, they're going to be, they should be better on offense next year. But man, that's going to be a competitive league. I mean, you have the two teams playing for the national championship. You have Ohio State, you have USC, you have Penn State, you have Oregon. UCLA was great on defense. And next year, USC has their coordinator. But what a night for the Big Ten to get two teams who are going to be in your conference next year playing for the championship. And I think it sets up next year with the 12-team tournament, this thought that the SEC could be had. You know, they had won four of the last five national championships out of the SEC. That's hard. You know, it's hard to beat the SEC. You know, when you look at history, but for them to not play for the championship, and those two SEC teams are out. And I am on the record. I picked Texas to win this tournament. I am surprised that they got manhandled the way they did. So look, Michigan and Washington is going to be a fun game, but you know, it is going to be Big Ten Network's going to be there, I'm sure, to cover this from and overblow this from every side, because they really saved Ohio State and Penn State by showing what Michigan could be with a full strength of, you know, with the full strength of their team. And Penn State and Ohio State just didn't have that.
With all of the influx of talent coming into the conference, it also feels like there's a lot of opportunity. You know, you mix in the 12-team playoff coming in too. You know, it's a very exciting time. This is sort of why I'm less concerned about conference realignment at this stage. You know, it's a Pandora's box that I think is impossible to close at this point. But just the unpredictability of next season. I know we're a far ways out from next season already, but you know, you look at Penn State, you look at the returners, you know, you look at you know, this season being used as a way to diagnose issues and sort of triage the way that you want to deal with them. You look at Ohio State reeling. You know, Ohio State is, you know, I was going to say Ohio State isn't a little bit of a rebuild stage, but you know, that means a different thing for Ohio State than it does for 95% of colleges out there. You know, I think that the chaos that could emanate from the Big Ten next year can serve Penn State well. I think the path for, you know, Michigan has played incredibly well this season. Washington has played incredibly well this season. You bring up Penix, and you know, Penix had a very strong case for the Heisman, certainly. It's not out of the question that the Big Ten doesn't have an undefeated team next year. Just with the, you know, I'm certainly not going to stamp my claim on that now. But I if you told me that was the case next season, I wouldn't be shocked. You know what I mean? There are going to be so many talented programs. For all the shade we throw at the Big Ten West, you know, there are some spoiler teams in there that can certainly ruin a season or two for a big program. I don't know how, as a viewer, you can't look at this Big Ten next year and just be excited. As a fan of the sport, there's a lot that can happen. You know, I don't think you can count a Penn State out. I don't know that you can necessarily count them in, but I don't know that I feel that way about many teams. It will be fascinating. I say that a lot, I feel like, but I'm fascinated about next season. A lot of things are going to change in college football, and I'm frankly not sure how they're going to go.
I don't know if it's going to be better. I really don't, but I don't know that it's going to be worse. I'm so jaded on the bowl system right now. After Florida State had what, 30 players didn't play. It was a joke. The Orange Bowl was an absolute joke. You know, Penn State loses a bunch of key players. I don't want to say the Peach Bowl was a joke. It wasn't that, but it did affect the play. Ohio State trying to play with their third quarterback against Missouri. Come on, you know, who takes that stuff seriously? But the two tournament games were great. And I think, you know, in lieu of bowl season, now next year, you're going to have, you know, half of your best teams are going to be done by 21st or 20th of December, whatever the date is that you're playing. So I think seasons are going to end earlier, but I think it'll make for a fun finish. And I don't know what's going to become of the bowls. I'm looking forward to seeing Iowa's return to the ReliaQuest Bowl, things like that. But you know, I don't know. It's going to be so different that I'm more morbidly fascinated than intrigued.
This is a little bit of a non sequitur, but I just saw it pop up. Apparently, Julian Fleming has told On3 Sports that he's committing to Penn State.
Okay, so yeah, that's not a surprise. So, they had to have somebody. They had to add somebody. I don't know how great Julian Fleming is. I really don't. I didn't get a great feel for him at Southern Columbia. Southern Columbia plays. I could do a whole podcast on Southern Columbia. They have the best players, and they play the weakest teams. They played 2A or 3A ball or whatever it is, and they should win the state championship every year. But and there's nobody, very few players physically can match up with a Julian Fleming. So when I say he dominated in high school, he dominated. And he was as dominant a player as you ever see in high school. He wasn't that way at Ohio State, but he's exactly what Penn State needs. As I said earlier in the episode here, bigger guy, experienced guy. He's not going to fail. He's going to be as good as he can be. So I think Julian Fleming to Penn State, that's a big signing. I think now that he can't be the only one at receiver, even if he's your number two guy, it's worth bringing him in for a year. I think bringing him home is going to be popular with the fan base.
Yeah, fitting on a day where we talk about the receivers for so long.
Yeah,
for him to come out and make this official today.
Yeah, it's fascinating how that happened.
But yeah, you're right. Is he going to be the number one? Who knows? Not only because, you don't get a feel for him at Ohio State. You know, he's an unknown commodity at Penn State. I think fans have to look at everything with tempered expectations after getting so excited about Cephas and McLean and everybody like that. But it's hard to see a receiver in the portal that seemed like a better fit for Penn State in this go around than Julian Fleming. I mean, that's the exact type of move that you want them to make to improve that receiver room, frankly. I mean, it's no shot at the guys that are in there. It's just, there has to be more of a threat at that position.
And bring in a guy who will lead the group. They lacked a leader there this year. They just didn't have anybody who, they didn't have a Dotson. They didn't have a Mitchell Tinsley. Mitchell Tinsley came in from Western Kentucky and was the leader of the group. So yeah, it's you have to have that guy to come in and set the standard and show how to show how to act and show how to work and show how to go about your business. And they didn't have that this year. So Sam, since I'm totally unprepared on Fleming in a way, yeah,
I started to spring it on you.
I have three questions for you. We'll do rapid fire and then we'll call this a day. Three questions. Number one, who's winning the national championship?
Oh, that's tough. I'm going to go Washington. I think Michigan is the better team. I think Washington's got the better quarterback. In college, I think a quarterback can take you far. I'm going to go Washington with Penix.
Yeah, I think I'm going with Michigan because they've seen Penix before. They kind of know how to deal with them. They have a very good secondary that could slow those receivers. I think this will be the best secondary that Washington has seen all year. So I think Washington, if they score in the 30s, they're in good shape. So Michigan's defense have to play well, but I think Michigan's going to get over the hump here and cross the finish line and win the national championship and be able to kiss Jimmy goodbye if he goes to the Raiders. second question here. How many teams make the 12-team field for the Big Ten next year, and is Penn State one of them?
Yeah, I think Penn State's one of them. Off the top of my head, I'm failing to remember how the non-conference champions make it. It's just the rankings, right? They
just the rankings.
Take
it's
in
the top,
the, just the top 12.
Top 12.
I'm going to say four. I'm going to say four, with Penn State as one of them. I would be surprised if Penn State was not one of those 12 teams.
I think if they get four teams, they'll be one of them. But it comes down to, they have a brutal schedule next year. I mean, I think that's the worst schedule in the league. I mean, they've technically back-to-back road games. They have a weekend between them off at USC, at Wisconsin. I think that's going to be a very tough road situation to handle. And then they have two road games in November. And then their two home games in November are not easy. They have with Washington and Ohio State, right? Ohio State and Washington back to back. It's going to be brutal. I don't think they're going to be one of the, I think the Big Ten will get three teams next year that I don't think Penn State will be one of them. I think they'll be the fourth team, but maybe they get four teams. They would have gotten what, three this year, right? Well, no, they'd have gotten four because they would have gotten Washington and Oregon. They would have gotten
the
five.
New look Big Ten.
Oh, well, maybe they will. Who knows? Final question, and then we'll call it a podcast this week. One of those 12 spots is going to a group of five team. Why? Why are we bothering? We saw what Liberty did against Oregon. Why are we bothering?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the playoff committee has proven time and time again that they try to do things that are the path of least resistance. Now they create a whole lot of problems for themselves in attempting to do that. I feel like that's this group of five thing. I go back to when UCF had the undefeated year and claimed their national championship and all that sort of thing. Part of me just feels like it's lazy customer service. It's just take it. I don't want to hear it anymore. Just what group of five you're in. And now I never have to hear about it as the committee.
It's basically a bye week for the number five seed. But why does the number five seed get a bye week? Why are we, and look, this year, what would you tuning into the Liberty Georgia game? That would have been an embarrassment to college football, to that tournament, to have Georgia beat Liberty by 70. And that's what would have happened because Liberty got just crushed by Oregon. Nobody was at the Fiesta Bowl. Five people, maybe, tops, go to the Fiesta Bowl, which is a great bowl game, an unbelievable bowl game, a great setting for college football, a New Year's Day tradition, and nobody cared. Why are you putting Liberty up against Georgia? I get it that if it's so weighted against them that they can't, even when they're good, they can't possibly make it. I get you have to force a way for a group of five teams. Cincinnati a couple of years ago is a good example. And they had Desmond Ridder and Sauce Gardner and players like that. And they were probably going to miss the playoff if there was another decent option, but they make it and they don't win and they play okay. But there are very few Boise States who are going to go and beat an Oklahoma when no one expects it. And Cincinnati had their chance and didn't look great. And Georgia beat them. These teams now aren't as good as Cincinnati was. So here's my view on it. Cincinnati would have made two tournaments. They would have been in the top 12 twice. So why not just put the top 12 in? I don't understand why you have to force a team in there who doesn't belong by the committee's own judgment. Why are we saying, oh, you know, we'll take the top 11 and Kent State? Why? What's the point? This is not Florida Gulf Coast against North Carolina in March. It's just not where anybody's got a shooter's chance. You have no chance to beat Georgia in a game that matters to Georgia if you're a group of five team. That's just my view on it. And I think that first weekend of college football playoff games next year, where you got the four games, the 5-12, 6-11, 7-9, and or 7-10 and 8-9, that is going to be as good a weekend for college football as anybody's ever seen. But if you throw one of those games as a throwaway that no one's going to watch, it demeans the whole thing. And nobody showed up to the Fiesta Bowl to watch that mess. It turned into a mess. Liberty did not compete. But hey, they reap the benefits of the money, and that's really what they want. They want the money. They want the money to be part of that. Would you rather see Oklahoma against Georgia because or Georgia against Liberty because that's what you're getting in this? And it's just much better if you leave them out and tell them, hey, go finish in the top 12 if you want to make it. they make the top 12 all the time.
By all means,
yeah,
make the top 12.
Yeah, make it. Just go do it. Just do what Cincinnati did. Sam, thanks so much for listening to me vent this week about everything Penn State football. We'll be back next week with to talk about the other topic everybody has emailed me about talking about. It'll be a pretty Drew Aller-centric episode next week, but we'll talk a little bit about the national championship game, which will be played before we get back on, and maybe we'll talk about some more transfer portal things, and or maybe they'll just happen while we're on the episode. Who knows? It'll be great. Sam, thanks so much again.
Thank you very much.
For Sam Freeman, this is Donnie Collins. Thank you so much for joining us. Try to relax in the Peach Bowl and take a few deep breaths before we meet again next.